everybody. Thank you for coming. We're going to go ahead and get started. I'm Casey. I'm from the Women's Center, and I'd like to welcome you to our Women on Wednesday series, Education, Advocacy, and Empowerment, celebrating 20 years. A few items before we get started. Please turn off all cell phones or pagers and stay seated until 12:50 as a courtesy to our panel. Also, if you could please fill out the evaluation sheet that you were given at the front. We do use them for future programming. Our session today is titled Feminist Mothers and Daughters. Two sets of mothers and daughters will discuss how feminism has shaped their experiences, perspectives, and relationships with each other. They'll also explore their journey of being in feminist-centered homes, as well as offer insights on feminist mothering, growing up with feminist mothers, plus the joys and challenges along the way. Our panelists today are Hetty Tripp, Azania Tripp, Julia Schaefer, Eleanor Simpson, and Erin Schaefer. Hetty is an activist and educator, a consultant, and a member of the National Asian Pacific American Women's Forum, and is the coordinator of Create Community, an organization designed to reduce racism in our community. Azania Tripp is a first-year student at St. Cloud State University and a graduate of the MSS Advanced Preparation Program, as well as a cast member of the 2010 Vagina Monologues at St. Cloud State University. Erin Schaefer is a feminist, a graduate student, and daughter of Julie and Eleanor, and an employee at the Mindful Heart and the Women's Center. Julie Schaefer has an MA in Interdisciplinary Holistic Studies and is a teacher, founder, and director of the Mindful Heart, a meditation and education center. Eleanor Simpson holds a PhD in American Studies, teaches at the Mindful Heart, and is a faculty emeritus from St. Cloud State University who has taught women's studies and American studies for 35 years. We're very grateful to have them all here with us today, and please join the Women's Center in welcoming Hetty, Azania, Julie, Eleanor, and Erin.
Thank you. I'm Julie, and I'm
bring them over.
Right up there.
Yeah,
I don't think we'll come up. Is that better? Yeah, my voice is a little low. I guess actually as I thought about this, I was really grateful to the Women's Center to have this opportunity to reflect on what it means to be a feminist and to be a mother. And actually the first thing that came to my mind was, gee, I don't think of myself as a feminist most days. It's not like I walk around thinking I have this label across my head that says feminist. So I had to really think about what that meant to take on that, and more specifically also to be co-parenting with Eleanor, this wonderful daughter of ours, has been a tremendous experience. But I also thought that I wanted to share what it meant to be both a feminist mother and a feminist daughter. My mother passed away 2 years ago, and she had an eighth grade education, and she cleaned here at St. Cloud State for many years. She was she started out as a cleaning lady. That's what they were called originally before they became custodians, thanks to the women's movement. And she wouldn't have known what that meant to be a feminist. She wouldn't even really have understood that word. But there's no doubt about it, she was a feminist. She was a feminist mother to me because I never heard the whole time that I was growing up, you need to be this way because this is what society expects you to be. I never heard that. I never saw that demonstrated to me. What was important was that I was to be who I was. It's your life, and I had that opportunity to be exactly what I was meant to be. And as a result, even though I did doctoral work in American studies, I actually ended up being a cabinet maker for 15 years and running my own cabinet business, which was not exactly traditional. So Erin grew up with a cabinet maker for a mom. Mm-hmm. And I found that even though my mother was a feminist, there was another aspect of that, that in order for me to have that opportunity to not think about the label of feminist, to just be who I am, was something that I had as a result of all of the efforts and the work and the public ridicule that came for many, many years before me and before my mother even. people who did think about that, who knew what that term meant, and who did the work out in society so that there was the opportunity for me to be a cabinet maker without thinking about it. Which doesn't mean that that was easy either, by the way. I remember buying a $500 table saw as a business owner and having the person that was helping me step aside in mid-sentence to help sell a $2 drill bit to a man. And so it's not that that was an easy road. But I realized as I thought about doing this that being a feminist was something that I was able to also provide to Aaron, I believe. I hope so. And I think I realized that, especially when the memory that really sticks out for me is when we were driving in a car, in our van with a bunch of girls in the back, and Aaron was very young, and being the daughter of two women in this town over the past 20 years has not been an easy thing to do, nor has it been easy to be the parent. We decided to be discreet and to not lie about our relationship, but also to be fair to Aaron, not to make that a public statement always either. We were just discreet. And some of the girls in the back started making comments about gay people. And I thought, well, this is interesting. And Aaron immediately piped up to all of these friends and basically said, this is not okay. You know, people are who they are, and they love who they love. And and proceeded to out us, by the way, all the way through. And in so many ways, Aaron taught me what it was to be a feminist because it was just there. It was just there. But all of that was won for us by all the other mothers that I have, because I believe that every woman in this room has all of these feminist mothers, because if you define a mother as somebody who makes the world safe and gives you the opportunity and encourages you to be just who you were meant to be, then we have many mothers. And I'm really grateful to that. And I'm grateful that I have that opportunity to be that kind of mother to Aaron. So. That's it.
Are you done?
I'm done.
Okay. Let's see. Is that okay? Well, I guess I appreciate having this opportunity too, and I appreciate the fact that the Women's Center recognizes, parenting and mothers. I guess even though I taught a course in mothers and daughters for many years here, to me, I guess this is a tough act to follow. for me, feminism really means wanting to create a society where everybody has access to everything that the society offers. Everybody is valued. I think the most important thing to me for parents, not only mothers, but for parents to do is to try to create that kind of world for their children and for everybody else. Create a world where their children have a chance to be just who they are. And I think that is difficult for everybody in the society, boys and men, as well as girls and women. I think that it's more difficult for girls and women. There are more obstacles, more barriers. There was a show on public TV recently called A Girl's Life, and we actually haven't gotten to watch all of it yet, but we watched maybe the first half. And they started out by saying that until about the age of, say, junior high, girls tend to be not only sort of ahead of boys in reading and verbal skills and equal to boys in math and so forth, and quite self-confident and everything. They kind of know who they are, and they don't worry too much about their appearance and this kind of thing. And then sometime in middle school or junior high, they start to lose that confidence. And this is disappointing enough in itself, but I found it really disappointing because that kind of research started to be done, I think, like 20 years ago. And several books came out on the subject and so forth, finding exactly the same thing. And so it's quite disappointing to find that apparently there's a great deal of that still going on. And that as they, you know, that as they said in the show, our society is kind of, or they said the world is kind of rigged against girls who don't fit the, you know, acceptable image and the acceptable model. I guess my time's up, except that I would like to say that being able to be Aaron's mother has been probably the highlight of my life, and it's a wonderful thing. And when she was a little girl, I always used to say that if I'd been able to send in a requisition for the kind of daughter I wanted, she'd be it. She was perfect. So, thank you.
As I was thinking about what I was going to say today, I couldn't help think back when we were actually, I work at the Women's Center, I'm a graduate assistant, when we were planning for this semester, we kind of had a discussion about, well, what is feminism? And we had this kind of long discussion is about, you know, does feminism mean you have to act in a certain way? Does it mean you have to kind of rebel against society's expectation of how you're supposed to act as a woman? And it really kind of like made me look at, well, what is my identity as a feminist? What does that mean that I'm a feminist? Because I hadn't really thought about it. You know, I grew up with two feminist parents, and it wasn't like, you know, they grew up saying, you know, here's a story about a feminist, you're a feminist, this and that. It was just like, it's just part of my life, you know, so it was hard to look outside of my life to see it in that way. But I went home and I was talking with them about it, and my mom introduced to me the concept of a radical, radical feminism. And I thought, radical, that must mean like you're really extreme, like you're really, but radical feminism actually means that basically instead of kind of being anti-feminine, which there are some feminists who are kind of, you know, anti-feminine, you can't wear makeup, you can't do this or that, that makes you a feminist. Radical feminism means that you kind of value the things that society kind of deems as feminine, like being nurturing or having emotions, that kind of thing, but also giving you the choice to be whoever you are and act how you want, but with the awareness that, yeah, society tells us that you should act this way as a woman, you should act that way. So as a person who does have a lot of emotions, and I've always, and my mom has kind of taught me how to be with my emotions and how to take care of them, and also as it was just kind of eye-opening, like, yeah, as there are moms out there who are incredibly nurturing, but they also are out working, and how incredible is it that they can have both of those, and shouldn't society equally value those feminine traits as well? And so that's what feminism means to me, and it's really kind of evolved over the years.
And it's, as I was thinking about it, I was really appreciating that how lucky I was to grow up with feminist parents, but just also two strong women who taught me that I could be whoever I want. Mom was talking about how, you know, she went to school, she was doing her graduate work, and then she became a cabinet maker, and now she learned how to do neurofeedback, which is about how the brain works, and she's an entrepreneur. She taught me as I was growing up that if you want to learn how to do something, you just do it. Like, you can learn how to do whatever you want, and no matter what, you know, society or even our, like, some of our friends are, you know, say, we can just do it. So I feel really grateful for that. And I guess as a daughter who's a feminist and as someone who's grown up with feminist parents, my message is just, you know, the same as my mom's, which is kind of funny because we both prepared separately at the last minute, but we kind of ended up at the same spot of saying, you know, it's about being aware that you have the power to be whoever you want, in spite of how society tells you should be. And I've learned, or kind of grown, I should say, because in a way, I think I, growing up, I did want to kind of rebel against what society wanted me to be, you know, and so I would kind of almost become prejudiced towards people who weren't feminists, you know, like, oh, she's such a Barbie doll or that, you know, that kind of thing. And now I'm realizing, wow, you know, all the women in society are women who've grown up with, you know, this, the media telling them to be this way, but that's they're more than that. And I kind of recognize my own, how I might in myself have been kind of acculturated to have that own awareness. What were you gonna say?
I'd like to add one thing about that, if I could, about radical feminism, is that when you are able to be whoever you are, that radically changes the culture. Mm-hmm. That by valuing those other traits, we nurture those to keep those in our culture, and that's what's radical, yeah, about it. It changes the culture to be who you are.
And I really love the concept and support it, because if you're kind of judging people who aren't feminists and kind of, you know what I mean, like, there can be that kind of wanting to be almost violent towards that. It's going to cause defensiveness and people, it's very difficult to look at for anyone that, oh, you mean I'm acting this way because society told me. Nobody wants to kind of be aware of that. So this is a way of, instead of pushing down the negative, raising how we value positive feminine traits. So, Hedy?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. I believe I was always a feminist. I always had that feminist orientation, and I think I grew into the definition that I have of a feminist. I am Asian American, I am Hapa, I am a mixed race feminist. And by definition, I am a fierce mother. I get that fierceness from NAPAF, National Asian Pacific American Women's Forum. And as a fierce mother, I speak truth to power. I speak out when I'm the only woman in the room, when I'm the only woman of color in the room, when I am the absolute minority in the room, I speak out. I face racism and sexism head on. So my feminism has always been very action-oriented, just that's the way I am. And racism and sexism, both individual level and the institutional level, being able to analyze and recognize that. And I am an angry mother. I am a passionate mother. I advocate for my children and the community's children. And I advocate for my sisters, for other women, especially women of color, and I teach them to be fierce. And fierce mothers, fierce sisters, always have fierce partners. I have a fierce partner. In 1989, when we came in, about the same time, I could have just hold this, about the same time that Jane came in, same time as Women's Center happened, I came with a feminist agenda. I was working on war toys at that time, really concerned about these issues. And Women for Social Justice, I believe, was part of some of the Women's Center discussions here. So I really got involved with them. We protested at Kmart, saying, you know, we don't want war toys. Of course, the war toys are still there. We addressed racism. This is 1989. Racism at SCSU, racism in St. Cloud. I'm looking back at my resume and I'm saying, oh my God, we're still working on this now, 20 years later. In 1989, my husband, Dr. Luke Tripp, led a protest demonstration against the police department for profiling and the beach club, which was downtown. I think that's where Pacific Walk is right now. They were discriminating against black people, African-American people, and the club closed. We protested again in 1990. Zania, I remember carrying her in my arms. That was on the police department, again on police profiling. And was awarded the Mary B. Craik Award for Equality and Justice. And that's a very, I think, a very prestigious award that the Women's Center has been very much part of. Right? Is the Women's Center part of that?
Human Relations.
Human Relations. Okay. So looking back, I'm seeing that I was really involved with feminism issues on campus. Was involved when my children were growing up. So as Anya was like 4 years old, I worked on a presentation on stereotypes in children's picture books. You know, here my kids were two, three, 4 years old, and I was reading them stories, and I was seeing all these stereotypes. So I went to the Early Childhood Center, took all their books, went through all their books, took out the books that had stereotypes, and used that as a teaching lesson to the teachers there, saying, how can you teach these kids the stereotypes about Asian Americans, about Native Americans in particular, about black people? So using those actions as a feminist. 1994, we're dealing with racism in schools, and believe me, we're dealing with racism in schools right now, too. South Junior High, Lincoln Elementary School. So as a mother, I was part of the site councils, part of the PTAs, but I found that even then, I didn't have enough support for my voice to be heard. I can speak out, but it doesn't mean that people will hear. There's a difference there. So you can be a feminist, you can speak out, but can you be heard? You have to have that support. I remember, you know, so many things that I was part of these last 20 years. I guess one of the issues that I was involved in was the Multicultural Children's Art Connection. And as I was a preschool teacher. And one of the things we, and also then the Full House Dance Company. And we produced Racism No Way, Let's Celebrate Today, when Azania was about 7 years old. What was your experience on that?
I got to be in a play, and no one wanted to play with me because I was colored.
So this was the...
Yep, that was it.
So I involved my kids. I involved the children of my community. There's Anjali, wave. And many other children in starting to think about what racism was. I organized Meeting Today's Challenges, the first multicultural women's conference, way back in 1997. By 2003, I was working at St. Cloud State University with ethnic studies, with the math science computer camps, but also became faculty advisor for Asian Students in Action. So using my experiences there. And then, by then, I was also then involved with National Asian Pacific Americans Women's Forum. And so I was building this support system and becoming a much stronger feminist, I believe, because of this support system. And where I am now is a good place. I just feel at my age, at 61, I look back even in just the 20, 40, 50 years, and I feel that I'm at a good place as a feminist.
Okay, so I believe feminism is about integrity. In my communications class, we read an article about how integrity is not just about what you believe in, but it's about this act. And I think with any kind of activism, you need to have this integrity to be the strong woman, to strong person. So my mom pushed a lot of things upon me. You know, you can tell. So when I personally felt that I was an active feminism was when I went to the National Asian Pacific Women's Forum thing in LA, and me and Anjali, wave again. Okay, good. And my friend Tahira, we went there and we experienced like this great relationship that all these Asian Pacific women, HAPA women had, and it was just so grand, and we wanted to have this same relationship in St. Cloud because, I mean, why do we have to travel all the way over, you know, to the edge of the United States to have this relationship? So what we decided was to create a conference for young Asians in the local high schools for Apollo and Tech. So we created information that we personally thought was interesting. So we talked about stereotypes, about being this dragon woman. So we personally had to educate ourselves because we knew that they weren't learning about their history. And we knew this was key because, I mean, why we can't have them be ignorant. So from that, we created a three-day retreat. So... And this was based upon what they wanted. So from the pamphlets that they created, they wanted to learn about, because a lot of them are first of their family to be born in the United States. So we talked a lot about immigration. And this was us, me and my friends, becoming active women. And from this point, I attended Perbert Center for Arts Education, and I was in the writing program. So I became an active writer. And from this opportunity, I was really excited to be part of the Vagina Monologue, but as we practiced in this room, growing up in St. Cloud, yes, I was aware that I was a person of color, clearly. So, and being in this room and working with this woman that I pictured it being, you know, this bonding and just being like, yes, we're women, you know, we're strong and we all collaborate, of being women, being oppressed by this. So, but unfortunately, as I sat in this room, we never socialized, and I had never felt my color as strongly from this room. And so it was very troublesome, and then we had this moaning part, and the director was like, African-American moan, Jewish moan, and these moans were just presenting stereotypes that St. Cloud is not prepared for. St. Cloud City is not, I mean, we were going through all this attacks of the Somali community. We're not capable. We don't have the integrity, you know? We can't do that. So I presented this to, and I, with Jane and my mom and other women that I knew that, you know, were a part of my community. Yes, Anjali. Okay. No. So I discussed my issues with this and just not wanting to, you know, present this and being the only woman of color, and I was not going to be tokenized. So I talked to the director, and the one thing that I got off from them was that I was trying to censor them, but it was nothing, to me, my opinion, is that it was not about censorship, it was about respect. And by having these two moans, you are not respecting me as a woman of color, because yes, I was a woman, but my color is very present in this group. You know, I felt that. And so that was And so they decided not to take it, or they tried to make changes, tried to change it to Aretha Franklin's song, Respect, which I don't know Aretha Franklin. Do you know? I'm not related. I don't feel like we have the same moan. So, I mean, I don't connect to that. That's again, you know, she cannot stand for every person that is black. That's ridiculous. So I ended up just leaving because that it was inappropriate, and my integrity said no. So I left, and that's the end. Thanks. Oh, and now I'm a part of Players, and I wrote a piece about the moan. So if you want to come to Players, which is on April 21st, 22nd, and 24th, 23rd, around 7:30, please come. At Eastman Hall, near the gym.
So that's my activist daughter, my feminist daughter, within the history of our being here for the last 20 years. Questions? Anjali.
Well, I can say from working at the Women's Center, I was just talking about this with the fellow staff member the other day about you don't really realize how kind of there can be a lot of anti-feminism in society until you start speaking up on issues, because we often receive actually phone calls or even articles in the Chronicle that are inaccurate and saying things about the Women's Center that just aren't true, that the Women's Center hates men, or I've just kind of become more aware of it, and it's just kind of impassioned me more to speak up. And I've also, from just attending a lot of the events that the Women's Center has put out, it really opens your eyes about how many issues women face. So.
I'm training now to be an anti-racism trainer for the Understanding and Dismantling Racism workshop sessions that you have here also on St. Cloud State. And I think really learning about analysis and racism, sexism, same thing, but really being able to analyze it in the big picture is really helping me. And I think really that addresses what you were saying.
I think I have a lot of those in my life that have led me to be more passionate about it. The one that pops into my mind is a phone call that we got because Eleanor was teaching and, in fact, was one of the original professors around here to help get the Women's Studies Department going. We have a of our almost 30 years together, a lot of that has been in teaching about these issues at St. Cloud State. And I remember a phone call at about 2:30, maybe 3 o'clock in the morning, get woke up from a dead sleep to a voice that said, "You're dead, bitch." And that pretty much shook me to the core. And there was just that realization that came from all of the things that, like Aaron was talking about, the misunderstanding about what it was, that when we started to say something about equality, that it went into a story that people had about what feminism was. And it didn't matter whether that was accurate or not, or accurate to us, and that really takes anybody's voice away when we conclude what we think it is based on hate and on violence. So I think that has been the guiding thing in my life. When we started the Mindful Heart, it is about stories and about prejudice, and very specifically for me and for us, we actually look at brainwaves all day, and we're looking for what's actually going on in our brain when we are prejudiced or violent.
And so, and that's kind of what's fueled it. So.
I guess there have been a number of things that make me passionate about it, but since I'm pretty much of the generation that was sort of started the 20th century women's movement, there was certainly one long before that, but I had the experience of being very overtly discriminated against as a woman high school teacher, and this was in California, just before the law went into effect that said you couldn't do that, being offered less than a fellow, than a male teacher who had fewer credentials. And when I protested, being told, take it, we'll tear up your contract, you know, that's okay, take it or leave it. And I guess another thing that comes to mind is that in the mid-70s, which is when we were just starting the women's studies program, and Mary Craig had offered the first women's studies course, Psychology of Women. Back in those days, registration was not computerized, so we all sat around the gym at tables, and students came and went and so forth. And I overheard these couple of male faculty in the psych department, or maybe they weren't even in the psych department, laughing and saying, I didn't know women had psychology, or something like that. In other words, it was just totally funny to them. Okay. So I think we have come a long way since then, but we've come a long way because, as Julie said to begin with, people have fought for that. Feminists have fought for it, most of them women, but some of them men.
Yes.
We shouldn't forget that. If things are somewhat easier today, that's because somebody was out there doing it. There's a traditional African-American song, poem, that one of the lines is about thanking the bridge we crossed over on. And it would be nice if we were all, you remembered your mother being, and whether people were fighting for things overtly, publicly, or whether they were just bringing up their children in certain ways to be themselves and be independent. I think we should not forget that.
Another thing that I remember is, actually it was sixth grade, probably one of my biggest or first feminist memories. I've always been into all kinds of sports, and one of those was football. I used to play with my brother in the backyard. We'd tackle each other. But I was sixth grade. You just could join. Flag football. And I was one of, I think, two, possibly three girls who later dropped out. But the first day of practice, the coaches asked, or basically said, I assume everyone here knows how to play football. And I was like, and everyone laughed, including the coaches, I believe. And I was sitting there, oh my God, I can't raise my hand out that I don't know how to play football. And it's not even an easy sport to learn. There are lots of rules. The coaches found out once we started practicing over time that I didn't know what was going on. And so I was embarrassed by that, and it was difficult, but then I kind of became aware, partly from talking with my parents, that, that shouldn't have happened that way, and that the coaches shouldn't have assumed that, and also how difficult it was to be, one of the only girls on a very large team of boys, and there were also boys in that who would make kind of sarcastic comments, and you always hear, oh, you play like a girl, that kind of thing. And So that was a really growing experience for me because I stayed in it even though there were the first days of practice I went home crying. I stayed with it and just kind of did it anyway. And I kind of, I guess, in spite of kind of the assumptions of some of the boys, I regained respect, I guess, because I just remember this one moment where I had the football and I was going like this, and I just was like running and kind of pushing people. So it's just one of those like memories that you think back on, like that I feel very fortunate because that was not an easy thing to do, but it was very rewarding because I love to play sports and that's just part of who I am. So, yes.
Do you want to take that one?
Artificial insemination.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yes, it was, I was artificially inseminated, and basically this of course brings to a great story to mind about my mother who was hard of hearing, and we were in, who was in a Catholic nursing home.
Oh,
and the openness of my daughter, this
you
is part of her being a feminist, trying
she
to just, to do, my mother had some dementia and couldn't remember that we were even partners. And so she was at very loudly trying to explain about, no, they're both women. and they were, she was artificially inseminated. And then I knew that I had raised my daughter right. Pardon me?
Did you also have a son?
Yes, yes. I have a son and who's a little bit older than Aaron, and they're brother, full brother and sister.
Yeah.
And I remember the picture book, Heather Had Two Moms. Do you know that? Oh, it's a wonderful book.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful book.
Yeah.
And it was part of my presentation of showing, you know, you do have alternative families. Mm-hmm. You do have... And you do have wonderful picture books about that, too.
Yeah, and that's been kind of another driving force as a feminist, too, I guess, is having two moms, because whenever I would hear a comment, like in high school or whichever grade I was in, about that's so gay, or even people directly saying, you know, kind of almost in a taunting way, like, you have two moms, or your parents are lesbians or something, it really, like, I love my parents, I look up to them as strong women, and it really... like angers me when people are disrespectful, especially because they're so awesome, you know what I mean? Like, but also because, you know, it's so unnecessary that there's so much violence and prejudice and hate for people just because they're different.
And I think that I'd like to add that it's been a great opportunity to just be a parent too, because Aaron's friends that were gay that were spit on in at Apollo, you know, would come over to our house and say, "It's so incredible to be able to come here and just have it be so normal," you know. And so I always thought that you know, even though we aren't always very politically active directly, that our lives were political in how we were living.
Jane was first.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is for the two daughters, the two young women in the room. I think you kind of intimated this a little bit, but did you have points of resistance in which you just went, you know, that is your life, that is not my life, you know, quit trying to make me a feminist? Did you rebel against your feminist mother? Says, I am not going to answer that question. And if the answer is no, that's fine, but I'm just curious as to young people often rebel at some point in their life or in their early lives against their parents, whatever, politics or whatever. And so I'm just wondering, did you?
I don't know if I rebelled, but I know I was tired of being someone's daughter. Like, I didn't want to have that label of being daughter. Like, I didn't have a name in St. Cloud. So that's why I went to a boarding school, so I could have the freedom of being a Xenia. Yeah. So,
Patty's daughter.
Yeah, and so, I mean, with that, I became my own feminist without that, but...
Sorry.
I guess I never really had that. I've always, I don't know, like I said, I really look up to both my parents, so...
With us, it may have been the other way around. I had to rebel.
Yeah.
I'm not that much of a lesbian mother. Stop outing us. No.
There was a question that you and Ben.
There? Yeah, I absolutely can relate to that. Because of being discreet, there are many situations where it's just not even an issue to start going into what it is, when, you know, just casual things. And so, of course, in this town, there was just an assumption, because I was Aaron's biological mother, and more directly, most people would assume that Eleanor was a friend of the family, or maybe a sister, an aunt, or something. So, yeah, there was a lot of assumptions, including from teachers. I mean, a lot of teachers were great and knew it, but there were also teachers who, when I had difficulties with my son occasionally or something, like every, you know, young adolescent male does, that it was about that there was no father, and which basically wrote it off. There was no way to make this better, to discuss with her what we could do to make his path better, you know. We couldn't provide this. So, and tons of judgment about that, about being a single mother. That's what I meant about all the assumptions that come with how we fill in the rest of the story. We find out one little piece of information, and we write in the whole rest of the story based on our prejudices and often our hatred. So, I feel for you.
We have one more question.
Oh, yep, that was a question.
That was well timed.
Case in point.
Teddy, did you want to take
that
one?
In a minute or less. I mean, go fast.
I forgot the first question. What was your first question?
Resigning to a big college age.
Oh, okay. I say I'm not a mother of a dog. I speak out. I say, you know, that's not acceptable. I do not say that in my presence. So I speak out.
I would just... To me, it's what we are faced, the challenges that we're faced with become the things that life has given us to take up the ball. You know, that a lot of those, you know, each one of us, each new generation has to be that new one to pick up and push the limit and make that space there for ourselves, and then by extension to our children.
And child care is a systemic issue. It's a class issue. If you can't afford that, there certainly has to be a lot of changes. There has to be child care in businesses.
Oh, absolutely.
And it needs to be respected that women need to have good child care. So it's a work in progress.
Do either of you just have a quick response on what you say to someone who calls you a bitch?
I guess mine's the same as my mom. I mean, not a female dog. Hello. Just, you know, just being witty. So.
Yeah. I'll smack them on the side of the head.
That's a good one. No.
To abuse.
I might be angry at first, but I try to respond and not react, I guess. Yeah.
I would say let's thank our panel. Thank you.